Well, good morning. We'll keep going through the Bible to the book of Numbers. I'm glad that everyone is here and safe that is here. And certainly don't judge anyone that did not want to brave the icy roads because they were out there. So, we'll go ahead and get started on the book of Numbers. So again, like I said, on the Bible timeline, we're camped out on that same spot for a little while here, and next week also around the time of Moses. So we're anchored right there. And that's straightforward enough. I forgot to give my kids handouts, but anyway, we'll go through the format as usual. So the summary of the book of Numbers, I'll give away the ending. It's not about numbers. It is not the best name. The original name, the Hebrew name of the book, is In the Wilderness. I wish they had stuck with that. It is extremely better name than Numbers. Numbers is the numbering part is like 10% of the book. So the real focus of it is them being in the wilderness. And to the point that, it is really the only book about the Israelites wandering in the wilderness. So you would think between, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, four books about Moses's life, you'd think with 40 years in the wilderness, there'd be more books about the wilderness, and there are not. It is this book, specifically. Everything else takes place in a pretty short time frame, in Exodus, well, the last half of Exodus and all of Leviticus and all of Deuteronomy. So, again, don't think that the Bible is spread out, in an exact pace of, you know, 1 year per chapter or anything like that at all. It can speed up and slow down, and you've got to be watching for that. Again, to the point that this book is not just about numbers. This has a bunch of stories that you probably know. Of course, I'm going to start with one that has a number in it, which is the 12 spies. But the focus isn't on the number. But that story of the 12 spies, and we're going to talk about that. That's the second half of the lesson. The 12 spies that go in and report on what Canaan is like. Then there's Israel complaining, which, yeah, you'd think like, well, isn't that in all the books? But there's some important scenes where Israel complains, in the book of Numbers. But then the more other famous stories, you got Korah's rebellion, the one where people get swallowed up by like an earthquake. That one's kind of cool, right? Balaam and the talking donkey, right? That one, kids remember that one with the talking donkey. The bronze serpent, we read that for the scripture reading. And then the really tragic story where Moses hits the rock. He hits the rock in, was it Exodus, I think, right? And he's commanded to, but he's not commanded to hit it in this book. And it has some very bad consequences for him. And then, like I said, what there's not a lot of is numbers. There's a census at the beginning and the end, and there are some numbers. Yes, there are, but the majority of the book is not about numbers. So please, if you've had that in your head, that's what this book is about, and I get it because that's the title, try to get that out of your head. It's not really about numbers. Okay, what makes this book special? It's the turning point of the journey to Canaan. So it took them 40 years to go from Egypt to Canaan, but it didn't need to. Their journey should have been, from what I've read, really only a few weeks, 2 to 4, really at the most. Now they did spend a year at Sinai, but you know, I mean, that was intentional, right? But then it says in Deuteronomy 1:2, that the journey, when they finally did get going again, only took 11 days, to get to the edge of Canaan. So it's the 40 years in the wilderness wasn't because, you know, they didn't know how to get there, or, you know, or it was a really long distance. It wasn't that long. Even with hundreds of thousands of people, it just should not have taken that long. It did take that long because Israel complained and didn't believe that God would deliver them from battle. You got to wonder why, because he delivered them from Pharaoh and walked through the Red Sea. but for some reason, they didn't think they could succeed in a battle in Canaan. That kept them from that. And only their next generation could go into the land. And then it's also sad because, toward the end, Moses, he doesn't lose faith at the beginning, but he has that moment where he hits the rock and God says, because you did not believe. Now, I mean, that doesn't strike me as not believing just because you hit a rock, but that's how God looked at it. And it kept Moses from the promised land also. So it is a big turning point, in this book. Not just numbers. Got it. Okay. All right. So the main characters, I tried to put this in order of actually how many times the words appear, in the book, which surprised me a little. So Moses and Aaron, not a surprise. They're always there, right? The Levites, I think they're the next most mentioned in the book of Numbers. So they get a lot. There's a lot of instructions, I think, to them. And Levites are the servants of the priests. And then you got Balaam. So he's only in there three chapters. But it talks about him a lot. yes, there's the story of the donkey, but also it's a much longer story about the prophecies, he's trying to, the king, Balak tries to hire him to do, and he, somewhat refuses. And there's a whole story, but, he gets mentioned a lot, actually. Korah also has a big story in there. And then Joshua and Caleb, who I would consider, big characters in the story, and they are, but they only get mentioned about, 11 or so times each. So, I was a little surprised by that. But their story is like the pivot point of the book of Numbers. So it doesn't have to be a lot, to be important. Then spoiler alert, right? Joshua and Caleb are going to be the only adult survivors of the time in the wilderness. People under 20, can make it, but they are the only adults. All right. So again, to put your thinking caps on with the timeline, I split the outline of the book of Numbers into three sections. If you are taking notes, and again, I forgot to hand out the papers. There's some in the lobby, but I forgot to hand them out. I would just put the three in red here, the three highlights, but just to kind of break it down a bit. So the first 10 chapters is about a year. It covers up through the 13th month of their journey after they left Egypt. Okay. Again, 10 chapters, like less than a year of time has passed, right? Or maybe a year at most. And it takes place at Mount Sinai. And you get a census, that's the numbers, and instructions for the priests about their laws and ceremonies, things like that. That one's maybe a little less exciting than the rest of the book. Okay. The next big section, gets a lot of the drama. This is the big chunk, right? So, and I'll break down how I get the numbers, but, chapters 11 through 20, cover the middle 38 years of the 40 years in the wilderness, right? So even within the book of Numbers, that biggest chunk of their time wandering is only in 10 or so chapters. So again, it's rather compressed. You don't really get an exhaustive narrative of their whole time wandering around. So the things you do get is the story of the 12 spies. That's at the beginning, right? That's why they had to wander, because of their unbelief. Miriam and Aaron, the siblings of Moses, decide to get all uppity and oppose Moses, in a story in there. Everyone's against Moses in this book, right? It seems to be his theme. Poor man. Korah and a crew that he assembles oppose Moses and Aaron. And then you get in this same time block where Moses hits the rock and he gives up his chance to go to Canaan. So a lot of action in that middle section of chapters 11 to 20. And then the last section, which is almost half the book, is all the final 1 year of the wandering in the wilderness. So, again, really a lot of chapters dedicated to a fairly short amount of time. And this is in the plains of Moab. You've got the bronze serpent story. You've got the defeat of Kings Og and Sihon. Now those may seem obscure to you. If you don't, love Bible names, but they are important. And when we get to the poem at the end, they come up in the poem. So if you can, try to remember their names. So they were promised Canaan, right? Which is west of the Jordan. And Og and Sihon are the kings of the territories east of the Jordan that the Israelites kind of pick up as bonus territory. So that's where this comes from. Then you got the Balaam story, then the second census, and then they get told, you know, some instructions about, you know, what to do when you get to Canaan. So, all right. So the dates, just in case you're curious, this gets very nerdy. I know, but just so you know, Numbers 9 verse 1, it talks about it. These are some time markers you get. This is how you can assemble, how the chapters are broken up. So chapter 9 is kind of a passing reference. This one's the least important, but it's the first month of the second year, after they had come out of the land of Egypt. It's New American Standard Translation. So that's how they're keeping time, is from the day they left Egypt. It's just starting to be the second year. In chapter 9, right? So everything before then, all of Leviticus, half of Exodus, all encompasses only the 1 year. Then chapter 10 is only a month later, so almost 2 months later. In the second month, in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month. So not much long after. And then I'm going to jump around here a little. In Numbers 33... it says that Aaron died in the 40th year after the people of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt. Okay, so we know that at least chapter 33 is at the very end, but it goes further back than that. So in Numbers 20 and verse 28 is when Aaron dies. So we can actually put together a timeline to where Numbers chapter 10 is at the start of the year 2, and Numbers 20 is in the year 40. Yeah? All right. The theology and doctrine section, you see Christ in the book of Numbers. So John 3 and 14 is where Jesus talks about himself as being related to the bronze serpent story in Numbers. And he says, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so the Son of Man must the Son of Man be lifted up. And then the idea, and this also borrows from Exodus, but the idea of the rock that gave water, as alluded to in 1 Corinthians 10 and 4, it says, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Let me turn there. I want to get that in context, because I suppose there's enough there. But it's actually kind of neat how he actually kind of expands the analogy out. So 1 Corinthians 10, I'll start in verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all did eat the same spiritual meat and all did drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Verse 5, but with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness, And he goes on, he really just makes an extended, you know, kind of argument about, their time in the wilderness and these scenes. So you get that. And then in the book of Numbers itself, there's, what many see as a prophecy of Christ, that Balaam says. So it wasn't all bad. Says, a star shall come forth from Jacob, a scepter shall rise from Israel. And you can see echoes of Christ in that. And then the rebellions are often cited, as well, in later times. So Psalm 95, verse 7 through 11, talk about, that time of disobedience, the waters of Meribah, and then Hebrews 3, 7 through 19 really expands on that, Psalm quite a bit. The whole, you know, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion, right? And then Jude 11 mentions Balaam and Korah as warnings of bad people, right? Or at least their deeds. So, again, it's probably a much deeper book than you may have really given it credit for, is what I'm getting at in all of this. So our recap, again, in case you're taking notes, it is about being in the wilderness, not so much numbers. It's the turning point of the journey to Canaan. Our main characters are Moses, Aaron, Levites, Balaam, Korah, and Joshua and Caleb. Crammed them together in one line because I only give you six spaces on the handout. But also they're just kind of together, partners in a way, standing for what's right. Your outline, you've got year one is chapters 1 through 10, years 2 through 39 is 11 through 20, chapters, and then year 40 is chapters 21 through the end, 36. And then we just talked about the, sort of prophecies and echoes back and forth, to Christ and to the rebellions. So, all right. Let's go ahead and talk about the 12 spies story. And that's in Numbers 13 and 14. If you think of just the story of the 12 spies, it's just chapter 13. But I include chapter 14 because that's kind of the after effects of the spying and of the people rejecting the account and then, God's punishment. And so the whole, I'm putting it all in one long story of chapter 13 to 14. And so we've kind of already given a summary of this a bit, but, God commands, 12 people from Israel, to do, recon, in Canaan is the shortest way I can say that. And that fits nicely on a page if you're taking notes. But if you're not a military geek and you don't know what recon is, the meaning there is that they were going to go and spy out the land, hopefully not get caught, because they want to invade the land. That's the reason they're doing the recon, right? And then bring back a report of, you know, the geography and the people, and the resources of the land, you know. So is this going to be a good place for us to go? You know, it's, I guess, you know, in a sense, it's kind of an interesting thought that, God has them do that because, he wants them to go there, but, he has them do this recon mission. And the result is it's scary. And that's, I would say fairly objective. Not yet giving an opinion on whether they can do it or not, but just it is intimidating. There's giants there. you know, and, of course, Joshua and Caleb believe that God can lead them to victory, but the other 10 do not. And it doesn't seem like the nation of Israel needs a lot of convincing to back down. And so the 10 men, do seem to convince the entire nation of Israel, that this was all a sham and they should have stayed in Egypt. As a result, God punishes them, to wander for 40 years in the desert and to die there. Not just to wander. We kind of summarize it as the wandering in the desert, but the other big part of the punishment is that generation will die there, and not get to go into the promised land. Only their next generation, will. So, except for Joshua and Caleb. And as much as I said that Numbers is kind of that, you know, turning point, in the story, this, this, in the story of their whole journey, this story specifically is like that moment even within Numbers where it's that turning point, where Israel has sealed its fate, if you will. And of course, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die as a result of their unbelief. So, die early, right? I mean, if you've got people that die within 40 years and they're only ages 20 and up, you've got a lot of people who, die, you know, before their time, really. grab a drink of water. All right, so our main characters, you've probably pieced together by now, Joshua and Caleb, the two spies that believe in God. Then you've got the 10 other spies who think everyone's going to die. You've got the Israelites who think everyone's going to die. And then you've got Moses, who does appear in the story as he pleads to God. So it's kind of an interesting part where God says, not just before he punishes everyone in the wilderness, God says, I'm just going to kill everybody and make a new nation starting with you, Moses. And Moses says, no, no. please don't do that. And so that's an interesting part there. All right. So I'll leave the outline up on the board and we'll go ahead, and read through, a good chunk of this, not all of it. So I'll skip the, sort of selecting of the men there. So Numbers 13, I'm going to start in verse 27. This is a little bit of a long reading. Numbers 13, starting in verse 17. Did I say 27? 17. and I'll read, I think I plan to read through 38 of chapter 14. So, again, it's a bit long, but it's an important story. So I wanted to just spend the time on that. Okay, one more drink of water. And then we'll go ahead. All right. So again, first 16 verses, they picked the men. And verse 17, and Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, get you up this way southward, and go up into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. And again, remember that God commanded them to do this. Commanded Moses to command them to do this. Verse 19, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, like bountiful, right? whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. Hint, hint. so they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And the descendants of Anak are the giants. Verse 23, and they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff. So that's kind of the famous story of the giant cluster of grapes that was so heavy they needed two people to carry it on a pole, even though it was just one cluster of grapes. And they brought of the pomegranates and of the figs. Verse 24, the place was called the Brook of Brook Eshcol, because the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence. And they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. Again, remember that. They spent 40 days doing their spying. Verse 26, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of Israel, of the children of Israel, unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great, and moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. So this is an honest report, right? This is what they were asked to report on. Is it have good, you know, crops and such? And how are the cities like? So it's just an honest report so far. Verse 29, the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. So he's very optimistic. Verse 31, but the men that went up with him, and we find out later Joshua is with Caleb. The men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So, again, the other 10 men sabotaged, you know, the whole report here. Chapter 14, starting verse 1. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said to one another, let us make a captain, and let us return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of Israel. Joshua the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of Israel, so they're making a second plea, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land, and give it us a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bred for us. Their deference is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. So they just don't want to hear any optimism, and they want to kill Joshua and Caleb. That's nice. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me, and how long will it be ere they believe me, for all the signs which I have showed among them? I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation and mightier than they. So God's ready to just start over. Verse 13, chapter 14. And Moses said unto the Lord, then the Egyptians shall hear it. So if you do this, if you go and just, you know, get rid of your own people, then the Egyptians shall hear it. For thou broughtest up this people in thy might from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land, for they have heard that thou, Lord, art among this people, that thou, Lord, art seen face to face, and that thy cloud standeth over them, and that thou goest before them by daytime in a pillar of cloud and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if thou shalt kill all this people as one man, then the nations which have heard the fame of thee will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people into the land which he sware unto them, therefore he hath slain them in the wilderness. And now I beseech thee, let the power of my Lord be great, according as thou hast spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people, according unto the greatness of thy mercy, and as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. So, really strong argument Moses makes. You know, you've got to do this. It'll look bad, basically, if you do this. Everyone's gonna, you know, see this and look down on on us. And he just pleads for God's mercy, right? Verse 20, and the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. So he's like, you got it. Verse 21, but as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely they shall not see the land, which I swear unto their fathers. Neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and hath followed me fully, him I will bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. And we find out later, Joshua also. Verse 25, now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwelt in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Verse 26, and the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in mine ears, so will I do to you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which you have murmured against me. So really ironic, right? They had done the census, and now we know exactly how many are going to die. Verse 30, doubtless you shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. So that's where we see Joshua's added in also. Verse 31, but your little ones, which ye said should be a prey, them I will bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses shall carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. And after the number of days, so this is that foreshadow, they spied for 40 days, right? Verse 34, after the number of days in which ye search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and ye shall know my breach of promise. So again, that little irony that they spied for 40 days, and he's like, well, I'll punish you for 40 years, one day for every year, or 1 year for every day. Verse 35, I, the Lord, have said, I will surely do it unto all this evil congregation that are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land. So the 10 spies that were doubtful. Verse 37, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord. So he made immediate, dispatch of getting rid of the 10 spies that didn't believe. Verse 38, but Joshua the son of Nun, Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. I just think it's interesting that a lot of the details that we assume are in the main story about like Joshua being in there are actually not revealed until almost the very end of this other chapter. So that's kind of why you need the whole picture there, I believe. So, all right. So in case you missed it, Joshua is the famous Joshua. we talk about, who are the two spies that said a good report of Canaan, we quiz the kids. It's like Joshua and Caleb. It's like, yes. But, I think it's interesting that Joshua actually has a long history, through these books. So he's got a book of the Bible named after him. That's pretty cool. and so, he's the one that leads the nation, to conquer Canaan. So he doesn't just get to see the land. He's actually the leader of the people. I'm jumping ahead a bit, but going way back. So Exodus 17, all right. So this is after they've escaped Egypt, before the Ten Commandments. This is pretty early on in the story. Some kind of army from Amalek, tries to attack the Israelites. And Joshua is the one that leads the resistance, to save the people of Israel. So he's been a fighter. For a long time, in this story, even though really it's only been about a year, but you know what I'm saying? Just as far as number of pages in our Bible, he was there early on, right? Probably as a fairly young man. back then. And I think that's interesting when they get to Canaan, it's going to be 40 years later, right? So he's probably in his 60s, 70s anyway, maybe 80s. Another thing that's interesting with Joshua, he was on the mountain with Moses at some point, like when Moses went to get the Ten Commandments and everything, like Joshua was up there. It's just a passing mention. But he was there. He's Moses' assistant. It's described, in the Bible. And then he was chosen to replace Moses later. So he's really been a very important part, of the leadership, of Israel. He's not just one of the good spies, but he's actually a really, critical, person. And they didn't want to listen to him either. And then also I think it's interesting. It's just the only time you read it, but he was originally called Hoshea. We see, in the part we didn't read, that Moses changed his name to Joshua. I don't know why, but, there's a lot to be said about Joshua, but anyway. All right. So here's the tricky part, in our theology and doctrine section. God was going to kill everybody. Like that seems a little surprising. Not for the, just that alone, but you know, I mean, you know, wouldn't that like kind of like ruin some promises, you know, and things like that that were made? You know, I'm not certain. I mean, he does simply promise a pestilence and to disinherit the people. But Moses' reaction is that he's about to kill them all. And so what would that mean, right? So, you know, we think about how Abraham was tested, rather than, God being the one that was going to kill Isaac, he asks Abraham to in a test of faith, and Abraham was willing, and passed the test, and then he didn't have to kill, Isaac. And so it almost seems, you know, maybe it's the same sort of idea, like, you know, God says, I'm going to destroy this nation, and is it a test for Moses, you know, that he passed, you know, that he says, no, please don't, I know you, God, and it wouldn't be good if you did this. You know, the book of Hebrews talks about that scene with Abraham and Isaac, and it says that Abraham believed that God could raise Isaac from the dead. The story in Genesis doesn't tell us that, but that's what the Hebrew writer describes it as. And so again, you know, I think that's important because, you know, when we think about like, well, what would that mean if Israel was wiped out in this story? Then what would happen? You know, there's that story of how the promise in Genesis 49 that the scepter should never depart from Judah. That's kind of a hint of that in Balaam's prophecy too. But you know, that would imply that kings have to come from Judah. And if he starts over with Moses, Moses is not from Judah. So how is that going to work out? But you know, I think it's important to realize that no matter what, God does find a way. So like I said, first, he didn't actually say, I don't read it as necessarily that he was going to kill everybody, but that's the way Moses took it. But you think about this, the analogy of Melchizedek, you know, that, you know, it said that, you know, how on earth could Jesus be a priest after the order of Melchizedek? Because Jesus was the tribe of Judah, not the tribe of Levi. How could he be a priest? But God had a plan that, you know, as Melchizedek, you know, kind of came out of nowhere, so did Jesus. And so, you know, God has a plan. I don't think you have to stop and say, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, was God bluffing? You know, and I don't know. I don't think it had to be that way. You know, he has a way, and he has a plan. And, that's all we need to know, right? So, again, to recap, if you're taking notes, you've got two spies that believed that God would deliver them from the Canaanites. The others convince the whole nation that everyone's doomed. And this, again, is a big turning point when Israel, you know, seals its fate for that generation. The main characters being, of course, Joshua and Caleb, the other 10 spies, Moses and the Israelites, and talked about how Joshua is the famous Joshua, the warrior and Moses' assistant and successor. I won't go over the outline because we that spent plenty of time on the story. We talked about was God really going to kill everyone or not. So we'll end with a poem, as I've been doing. So Psalm 136. It's funny because Marie has actually been looking at this lately, not for the same reason that I'm going over it, but just the theme of it is English Standard Version calls it, His steadfast love endures forever. And it's a neat poem. As you'll see, I'm still turning there myself. But I picked it for a different reason. So if you glance over it, especially if you have a translation that has the indenting, poetic style, you'll notice that same phrase is in every single verse. So 26 verses, and everyone ends with, King James says, His mercy endureth forever, or His steadfast love endures forever. A New American Standard is something like, His loving kindness endures forever, or something like that. But they all end with the same phrase, over and over and over again, which is a really unique kind of thing. In the Psalms, but there's a big section in the middle of 16 through 22. So 16 starts, to him which led his people through the wilderness, and then it goes on and talks about King Sihon in verse 19, King Og in verse 20. So that's why I chose this one, just for its sort of obscure mentions of those kings and how it relates to the book of Numbers. So we'll go ahead and read this and then be done. So Psalm 136. Give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endureth forever. O give thanks unto the God of gods, for his mercy endureth forever. O give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endureth forever. To him who alone doeth great wonders, for his mercy endureth forever. To him that by wisdom made the heavens, for his mercy endureth forever. To him that stretched out the earth above the waters, for his mercy endureth forever. To him that made great lights, for his mercy endureth forever. The sun to rule by day, for his mercy endureth forever. The moon and stars to rule by night, for his mercy endureth forever. To him that smote Egypt in their firstborn, for his mercy endureth forever. And brought out Israel from among them, for his mercy endureth forever. With a strong hand and with a stretched out arm, for his mercy endureth forever. To him which divided the Red Sea into parts, for his mercy endureth forever. And made Israel to pass through the midst of it, for his mercy endureth forever. But overthrew Pharaoh and his host in the Red Sea, for his mercy endureth forever. To him which led his people through the wilderness, for his mercy endureth forever. To him which smote great kings, for his mercy endureth forever. And slew famous kings, for his mercy endureth forever. Sihon, king of the Amorites, for his mercy endureth forever. And Og, the king of Bashan, for his mercy endureth forever. And gave their land for an heritage, for his mercy endureth forever. Even an heritage unto Israel, his servant, for his mercy endureth forever. Who remembered us in our low estate, for his mercy endureth forever. And hath redeemed us from our enemies, for his mercy endureth forever. Who giveth food to all flesh, for his mercy endureth forever. O give thanks unto the God of heaven, for his mercy endureth forever. So we'll end there. This time, just extend the invitation for any that are lost and wandering out in the world. We have a Savior that has come to seek and save the lost, and wishes you to come to Him and to be saved. So if there's any that are here that wish to obey the call of the gospel, or ask for the prayers of the saints, then please do so as we stand and sing the song of invitation.